Hello, and welcome to Perception Check. We are doing one of our fun backstories. I'm here with...
River Song.
And we will be digging a little bit into this one. It'll be fun. I'm excited.
I'm not sure I know what's going to happen.
well, on purpose. Right. Again, I'm going to say what I always say when I do the background ones. I'm just taking information that you've given me. And I'm adding a little bit of flavor to it. I'm really trying not to, like, write your story for you.
Right.
And it turns out before we started recording, there were a few things that I got mixed up on. But we're going to roll with it and just kind of see what happens. All right. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. So we are going far, far back to when River was very, very little and was raised by animals. Okay, so I need you to roll me a dexterity check.
Fail.
What
one.
Is it?
I rolled a one.
You rolled a one?
Yeah.
Okay. River, you trip over a log.
Yep, that hurt.
Yes.
I remember.
You tripped over a log. This deer that you're chasing is fast, but... You were trained by predators of the forest, so you're kind of able to get back onto your feet and continue chasing it. And learning from them, you kind of learned your prey's habits. You know the arc and the slight twist that the doe is currently doing as it bounds up into the air, and you can tell it's going to cut left.
Okay.
So go ahead and roll another dexterity check.
9.
Well, you cut left before the deer, and you tackle it kind of at an angle while it was in mid-jump.
Okay.
You take care of the deer, and you bring it back to a small cave where a pack of wolves come out, and you kind of feast.
Okay.
Now, how old are you when you were kind of in the thrall of getting trained by animals?
Well, I was 3... when something happened to my parents. I don't know what happened to my parents. And so I guess, like, before I, my first memories of being with the wolves were probably, you know, 5, you know.
Yeah. But, and you're a wood elf, correct?
Right.
That's probably, like,
100 years.
Yeah, it's like 100 years. Elves are crazy.
115, 20 years ago.
So when we kind of throw out some ages, it'll be relative to elf years.
Right.
So, because I'm not going to do any math on that.
No.
So you were abandoned as a child.
Yeah.
We'll say animals kind of passed you around.
What?
Like, think of year or not year without a Santa Claus.
Oh,
Santa Claus came,
different groups
coming to
of
town.
Wild animals.
Yeah, you were kind of a child of the forest.
Like the Jungle Book, he hung out with Bagheera.
Yeah.
And I almost said Babar.
Baloo. Babar could have been there.
What?
Babar could have been there.
Babar's an elephant. Yeah, he could have been there too.
Sidetrack. That Babar, the first story, that is super brutal, man. Like,
the one
people are just
with
getting
the war?
Killed. Like,
I remember it vaguely. I remember it's the first time I was exposed to catapults as a child.
Yeah. I was reading it to my daughter, and it's like, oh, someone just blew his dad's face off. That's
oh,
what
yeah.
happens
it's
in
so
this.
Sad, but,
yeah,
too.
It's terrible. Yep. Anyway.
I like Babar's.
Okay. We'll establish that in Perception Check. Babar's family is alive and well.
Yes.
Within the woods. Okay, so they feast, and the next morning you carefully wander through the woods, kind of looking for your next meal, perhaps. A lot of the pack leaders in your group and one of the mothers who had kind of come to raise you are kind of putting you out there. You've been doing it for a little while, taking part in more of the lead. I think they kind of see, well, obviously you're different, but you're also highly, highly capable in the woods.
Okay.
You hear a small sound. Go ahead and give me a perception check.
14,
okay. Yeah, you hear a loud clanging, like hammering, almost, coming from a section of the woods. So you hear this loud metal clanging, and it's coming from, Foley work, it's coming from the mountainside up ahead. You can kind of hear through the trees.
Okay.
What would you like to do?
I'd like to, it's hard not to think of my current character versus my...
Yeah.
I don't know what spells I have that are only level one. I'd like to, what I would do is try and stealth and sneak toward it.
Okay, go ahead and roll a stealth check.
Which isn't, I'm rolling really poorly tonight.
That's okay, we'll get him out of the way now.
Five would be my stealth check.
Okay, you follow the noise pretty easily from your perception check, and you kind of peer into a clearing, and you see roughly 15 dwarves building a small structure. And just behind that, there's about 5 dwarves kind of hammering into the side of this mountain and kind of digging a hole into it.
Okay.
What would you like to do at this point? Are you curious? Would you like to
go a little bit closer? I think I'd try and sneak around a little more and get a closer look at what they're doing.
Okay. While moving through the bushes, since your stealth roll was a little low, from behind, a muscular dwarf with white, long, kind of braided hair picks you up and goes, "Spying elves! Trying to take even more from us, eh?" So why don't you give me a strength check?
9.
9? Mm-hmm. Okay. So he kind of overpowers you and is kind of holding you in this bear hug as you're kind of reacting and twisting and wriggling around, kind of trying to scratch at him. He holds on to you and he kind of goes, "Whoa, there's a lot of fight in you." And he kind of gets a good look at your face and he's like, "Wait, this elf has gone feral." And he kind of looks around and he's like, "I don't see any other elves around here. Cronin!" And another dwarf in the distance, who's a little more squat and round, turns. He's dressed a little bit nicer than the others. He's kind of the head of this whole operation going on right now. He goes, "Yes? Oh, my, what do we have here?" And he kind of comes and looks at you. And he says, "Oh, poor thing, she's acting like an animal." And he's like, "She must be abandoned. Why don't we bring her inside and we'll get her some food?" So in kind of this new environment, what does this all kind of look like for you?
Well, I think probably a lot of hesitation and fear at first.
Yeah.
But really, I don't know the, you know, because I was so young, last time I saw humanoids, basically, I enjoy the company and am curious about the people shaped, or the creatures shaped more like me.
Yeah.
And,
I
you know.
I want to know.
Exactly.
Show me.
Just like Tarzan said.
Yeah.
And so I kind of enjoy the comforts of, like, you know, I assume they take me into the house and, you know, like a warm shelter, you know, that's not.
Yeah, they give you blankets,
right,
food.
That's not outside. And so,
yeah,
you know, maybe I go outside and wander away, but come back out of curiosity and then.
Yeah. I'm assuming they house train you.
Yeah. You know, pie training at such an old age is.
Yeah. And how long did you stay with the dwarves?
As wood elf years go, until maturity, you know, until a time when you would leave your family.
Yeah. So like,
I don't remember
years.
Yeah, I don't remember the years. I
discussed 30.
Yeah.
As kind of making sense. Well, during this time of kind of playing it cautious, you learn that Cronin is a legitimately really kind dude.
And I always picture, I don't know if you wrote this in, but as one of the things that drove me away was Cronin, the patriarch of my dwarf family's death.
Yeah.
And that when I decided it was time to leave. You know, I spent so much time with them, and I realized that their lifespans aren't quite the same as ours.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's one of the reasons I decided to go out on my own and figure out.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't really fit in there. And anyway.
Okay, that's perfect. We'll get to that in a little bit. So, kind of over this next 30 years, you learn that Cronin, who adopted you, he has 10 sons, but one of the things he always wanted was a daughter. He believes that women are smarter. he kind of wants a woman to kind of head the group and kind of where it's going in terms of mining. He feels like his sons couldn't really inherit it. They're great at digging, they're great at mining, they're good at picking out spots. But in terms of kind of running a business and a trade,
they need a woman.
Great.
Yep.
They need a woman. one of the things he does is he decides to name you.
Okay.
And he gives you a name, Krona, which for an elf, might kind of be an ugly dwarf name.
Right.
He also teaches you many other things. He also teaches you how to fight, as dwarves do. Dwarves are known for being stocky, strong.
Mm-hmm. More warrior types.
Yeah, more warrior types, and being able to handle themselves hand-to-hand. In 30 years, being the only girl around, you know, over 20
mining.
Dwarves
yeah.
who are mining and stuck in mines all the time, it can get a little awkward. So why don't you roll a d20 for me?
20.
Okay. So throughout your time growing up, there have been slight winks and nudges, and there's been a couple when you've gotten a little bit older who have kind of approached you, some after drinking, and you have successfully defended yourself and beat the crap out of them. So you're basically a person now who they don't tend to mess with. They respect you for your
right.
warrior ability, and just kind of know that you're one of them, not so much an outsider. Don't worry, if you rolled low, I wasn't going to have one, like...
I was going to say, where's this
really
going?
Get really weird and aggressive. I think Cronin would have stepped in
sure.
at certain times, but you can fully handle
in this
yourself.
Case, I stuck up for myself.
Yes, you were good. I just realized how I was wording that. I was like, oh, God.
and Corey just put in a rape scene.
Yeah, and you... And what's nice about being an elf is you have natural light-footedness. So
right.
their ability
I'm much
to
quicker than them.
Yeah. So learning their ways of attacking and battling with your swift-footedness, you have advantage against these people very easily. Cronin, as you're getting older, wants you to start to take part in some of the mining duties. He wants you to get some hands-on experience kind of digging in the mines. How are you kind of feeling about that?
I've watched it a lot. For a while. I'm assuming I've been with him for a couple years at this point.
Mm.
And
this is kind of towards the tail end of your 30.
Okay. So I think just curiosity and, you know, wanting to try and fit in among the dwarves and giving it a go.
Yeah.
I think River's up for it.
Yeah. Go ahead and roll a d20 again for me.
Two?
Okay,
not
so
very good at mining.
You can't quite hold your own in the mines with the dwarves, and it's kind of wearing on you a little bit. It's getting really monotonous, being cramped in there with a bunch of other burly short dudes.
I may have speed, but I don't have dwarf strength.
So. Yes, so it's a little bit difficult keeping up, and you're kind of getting a little more against the idea of joining them in the mines.
Mm-hmm.
The business aspect, you're still pretty, you got that down. You are working in this cave for quite a while. You're digging deep. You're mining for crystals and gems and just any sort of natural stone that you feel like could be worth money.
Right.
And one day, as you're following the other miners, kind of dragging behind at this point, you're kind of the last one getting in there. The rocks on your left and the dirt and the soil that you've kind of been going through starts shifting.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of indents into the wall and it starts to reveal a pathway.
Okay.
What would you like to do?
Go down the pathway.
I'm glad you chose that. Otherwise, this would end very quickly.
Run away.
You run away. Scary. So you follow this pathway down another route into the mountain, and you can kind of hear some rocks kind of crumble, so it sounds like it's kind of closing behind you. And you walk into a room with thousands of crystals sticking out of ceilings, walls, and floors. There's roots hanging down. It looks kind of like normal roots from the trees that are kind of on the mountainside.
Mm-hmm.
But there's one set of like five roots in particular that look a lot thicker. They're hanging down a lot lower. And as you walk through, you see a pile of rocks kind of in the center of this room, and in the middle of it, a tall green emerald that's just kind of sitting there shining. I don't know if you've ever heard of I think in Lord of the Rings they have, like, the heart of a mountain,
mm-hmm.
which is, like, the treasure that is inside of it.
Right.
This is basically that.
Okay.
You don't know how, but you hear a soft echo from the room itself. And you hear a voice say, this is going to be me doing an awful woman's voice. Child of the forest, your spirit has opened a way to my heart. This emerald you see before you grants you wisdom to the world around you. Please, child. Place your hands on the stone and take my gift.
River does it.
Okay, you put your hands on the stone. Very trusting of strange voices.
That's one of her character traits, though. She's not really She kind of likes to jump in a little bit.
No, that's perfect. You put your hands on the big green emerald and you explode.
River dies.
I'm kidding. You place your hands on the emerald and you feel a rush of, you know, like, I'm going to use Harry Potter as an example. When he grabs the wand and the wind, like, blows.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like that, but on the inside. So you're getting this weird
rush of energy
sure. going through your body. And you can hear this voice again, and it goes, the mark of the druid is implanted in you, my child. Though many druids exist, none were chosen by nature itself as a defender. And it says, I trust you to use these powers to connect with nature and protect me from those who try to do me harm. There are many, many like you that will claim to be like you, but you are as unique as a river's song. And the voice kind of fades out. Now, I would like you to roll a history check.
Two.
Okay.
Don't know much.
So that's pretty low. You're not going to get a whole lot from this, but you get the basic idea.
But it would make sense that she wouldn't know a lot about history.
Yeah. But with these new powers, they kind of give you a little bit more insight to kind of what's going on in this gift you've retrieved. You know that this isn't some mountain speaking to you. You kind of get the sense that it's coming from these large entangled roots that were sticking out of the ceiling. And that those who are true druids don't necessarily pass on to the next thing. What they do is they take shape within nature themselves. And you kind of piece together that this is possibly sort of a resting place for a previous person who was chosen, and they have the ability to pass on the gift to the next person they deem worthy.
Okay.
So you're kind of able to piece that together.
In spirit, like that's where they died.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they kind of take a new shape after they die.
Okay.
So you kind of start walking out. You're not really sure what any of this means. Basically, you kind of know that they have a connection with nature and you can kind of use that to your advantage, but you don't exactly know how to use that or what it all means. And do you kind of decide to come out of the cave, or do you join the mining after that? The pathway opens up again.
Yeah, I think she probably, you know, wouldn't say anything yet or anything like that. Probably get back to the mining party.
Okay.
And, you know, just kind of internalize it for a little bit and think about it.
Yeah. As you're working in the mines, you're working with the other dwarves and it's really loud, but you hear kind of a scuffling behind you, and one of Cronin's sons runs in. His name is, they call him Tank. He runs in and he goes, there's a problem! We need help! And they, everyone starts running out of the cave following him. You guys go out of the cave. I'm assuming you follow.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you follow, and you see Cronin collapsed on the ground. It looks like he's had some sort of a heart issue or something, and they're trying to revive him, but his breathing is really shallow.
River would kneel next. I mean, this is her father figure.
Yeah.
So she'd kneel next to him and, you know, try... see if there's anything that she can do. I don't think she know, like, she just got the powers. I don't think she knows to use them yet or how to use them yet, so.
Yeah, so you kind of kneel down next to him, and he kind of reaches out and he grabs your hand, and he kind of looks at you, and he's like, you seem different, and there's a lot of, like, rumble and people talking and people trying to work on him and get different salves and plants and potions and trying to kind of work on him, trying to figure out what's going on. But he kind of grabs your hand and he kind of says, you seem different. Is there anything you want to say to him?
I don't think she'd really tell him about, you know, at this time. So I think she would probably just say, you know, it's me, it's Krona. You know me, or, you know, maybe she thinks that he's delirious, or, you know, that's the only reason he senses something different, so.
Yeah.
Well,
he, kind of looks at you, and he kind of goes, You are meant for far more than this. And he says, I love you, Krona. And he passes away. So, kind of a bummer.
Mm-hmm.
So, after this, moment, what kind of happens for River?
I think she feels, with him saying that, she feels released from her, you know, debt to the trying to make this mighty thing work that she doesn't care for. And she also feels like he was what was tying her to, you know, her loyalties to the dwarves and stuff like that. Not that she doesn't feel loyal to them anymore, but what was keeping her there.
Yeah.
And then with his dying statement kind of released her. So I think she feels compelled to go out and see more of the world and kind of almost take a, what's it called?
Mental vacation.
Sabbatical.
There we go. That's a better word.
Along the way I was going with sabbatical or...
No, that makes sense. So this is kind of the start of River's hermit life.
Right.
Yeah.
So she doesn't know anybody or anything outside of the dwarves and nature, and so she just kind of packs up on her own and, you know, doesn't really connect with anyone or anything and just does her own thing.
Kind of taking a moment to kind of figure out what's happening. A lot happened on that day.
Right.
And just kind of needing to find herself as she goes
out. She's grieving Cronin, and she's exploring this experience she had with the Emerald and trying to figure out what it's all about. And she's spending time in nature. I'm sure she's passing through towns and stuff, but not really connecting with people or anything like that.
Yeah. Okay. So as you're kind of wandering through the woods, you're kind of following along this mountain range, and it kind of splits into the forest. And as you're kind of walking through the forest, because of your upbringing, the animals are actually very, very friendly towards you, and you're not experiencing any sort of issues with them. You do come across a cave that's been abandoned within the cliff face that looks like it may be a pretty good shelter. So we'll say you kind of hole up in there for a little bit, kind of make that your home. Mm-hmm. So, hermit life. What type of stuff do you think River would do in her off time, kind of meditating on the fact of her life and where it's going?
I think she spends lots of time, you know, out hiking and discovering nature, learning things about nature, but also experiencing with her mat. She's discovered that she has this magic ability.
Yeah.
And so she's practicing spells, kind of trying to tune her magic ability. She also was really inspired to try and pursue healing, to try and learn.
Yeah.
Her experience with Cronin, she felt so powerless not to be able to do anything when he died. So
I love that.
So trying to find ways to help and heal and not only, you know, animals and nature and but even like herself if she gets injured, you know, mending and that sort of thing. So
it's beautiful. I love that. So we'll say you're kind of out there. What's nice about this cave is this cave where it's set up, you can actually see throughout the forest there's kind of a hill that dips down into kind of a gulch, and at the end of this gulch that kind of goes out to a peninsula in the sea are what they call the Three Giants.
Okay.
And these are three very, very large mountains that stand basically in a row towards the end of this peninsula, kind of capping off the end of it. Okay? It's beautiful, and it's a stunning view that you wound up finding in this cave.
Okay.
As you're going through, we'll say about 5 years in, to kind of your hermitude and kind of working on hermitude and kind of working on your magic.
You made a new word.
Outside one night, just as it's probably dusk, starting to get a little dark, but there's still enough sun to kind of see what's going on, you hear some passers-by. There's some arguing and some roaring. One thing I forgot to mention, this is important. During your time, they did teach you Dwarven and Common. So,
I can talk.
Kind of implied. You can talk now, and you know both Dwarvish and Common.
Yes.
So there's that. So go ahead and roll a perception check.
19.
Yeah, that's good.
I say plus 5, so 24.
You hear a couple people shouting, and they got kind of nasty little voices. And one of them's like, he's got to break it. He needs to stop thrashing around. Hit him in the legs with that mace. Don't injure it too much, though. The king wants his pet to be vicious.
What language are they speaking?
They're speaking common.
Common, okay.
And you hear a roaring.
Well, I think Rivers perceived that there is an animal in danger and they're trying to capture it. So I think she probably would come to the rescue, try and defend this animal.
Okay. You go down and you kind of follow this noise and track it, and you see from the woods a one-horse carriage that in the back is kind of a wooden cage that they've built with a tiger inside. And there are three goblins, one in the driver's seat of the carriage and two towards the back holding maces, trying to stick them through the bars and kind of whack the tiger to get it to calm down because it's thrashing around in there. On the outside of the cage, there's a latch lock. There isn't like a locking mechanism that you'd have to pick. It just kind of flips and moves. So how would you like to approach this?
I don't think River's very versed in combat yet, even though she's practiced a lot. So I think she kind of just runs in, maybe jumps up on the carriage and tries to get between them and the tiger.
Okay, roll an acrobatics check.
12.
Okay. So you put your knowledge of nature and your surroundings totally to your advantage and your elf nimbleness. So you basically sprint out of these woods, jump up and grab onto a branch, and you swing off of the branch onto the shoulders of one of the goblins, kind of knocking him to the ground, and you jump off onto the cage, and you're trying to flip the lock?
I think I'm just trying to get them away from it first.
Okay.
You know.
Okay, so...
I think she's ready for a fight. She thinks she's going to fight them.
Yeah.
And she's kind of been looking for a fight. She's been out on her own practicing.
Want to test out
Right, out on her own practicing for a while,
oh,
and,
yeah.
you know.
Okay, so...
She's not afraid of the fight.
So you're up kind of onto, like, this carriage just out of reach of the tiger. The tiger's kind of taken aback by you. It's not attacking you. It kind of sees what you're doing here. And it has a sense about you.
Mm.
And you are kind of a couple feet up from this goblin who is now on the ground and a goblin who's running around from the other side. So why don't we roll initiative?
Nat 20.
Coming through. All right, River, you are first. What would you like to do?
She's going to try out some of her magic she's never used.
Hell yeah.
She's going to cast Thunder Wave, which is going to sweep them. So they have to make a saving throw, constitution saving throw.
Okay. No.
So it's going to take 2d8 thunder damage.
Dang, okay.
To 15 cubic feet, so I'm assuming to both of them.
Mm-hmm.
And they're pushed away 10 feet from me.
Okay, so there's two right next to each other, so it should hit both, right?
Yeah, so they each took 7.
They each took 7?
Mm-hmm.
You killed 2 goblins. Now there is one up in the driver's seat who kind of turned around and saw this whole thing go, and he's kind of like, just kind of stuttering in the front seat. How would you like to proceed?
I think she's pretty cocky now.
Okay.
She's going to cast Produce Flame,
mm-hmm.
and so she's going to cast a fireball
mm-hmm.
to attack him with. Sorry, I gotta read.
No, you're okay.
So I'm gonna throw it at him.
Okay.
And I think I have to roll to hit. And I don't think that hit.
Oh, what is it?
2.
2. That's with your modifiers and everything?
What modifiers?
It'd be
this my spellcasting
yeah.
modifier. 7.
So it's a 7?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That will miss.
Okay.
But after seeing you completely destroy 2 of his friends and getting a fireball whizzed by his face... he jumps out of the cart and lands on the horse and unhooks it, and he just goes riding off screaming. He's terrified. So now you're left with this tiger in a cage.
So she's going to try and find a way to get it out. She's going to try and release him.
Okay.
First, she's going to cast Speak with Animals.
Okay.
And she's going to try and talk to the tiger. So I don't have to roll anything. I just cast it.
Okay.
And she just, you know, tells the tiger, calm down. I'm going to let you out. You know, I'm trying to set you free.
Okay, and the tiger goes, okay. I was thinking of doing, trying to do like a Garfield voice. A tiger I thought voice. That'd be funny. But I'm just going to go with that.
So she, you know, is it the cage locked? Or
It's just kind of a slide lock. Okay. So you just got
to. So she unlatches the cage and, okay. you know, asks him if he's injured.
And he's got a little bit of a cut on his leg from where one of them hit with the mace.
She maybe puts a band-aid on his leg.
Okay.
Or whatever.
And he kind of like, kind of growls at first.
Nothing too fancy, but...
Yeah, he's still kind of playing it a little cautious.
Sure.
And then you notice that he is basically readying for a leap. And before he can do anything, he pounces on you.
Okay.
And knocks you to the ground. And he gives you kisses on your face.
Aww,
little tiger licks.
Little tiger licks. Except for that sounds really rough and painful on the cheeks.
Well, he doesn't know.
I'm just teasing.
And you've had plenty of experience of animals licking you, which is not a sentence I thought I'd say.
You didn't know this backstory.
He just is ever thankful and swears to be by your side. And wants to be with you. They kind of pulled him from some other complete different area. So he has nowhere to kind of go back to. So
take him to my cave. I'll share my food. I got a new tiger friend. Sounds good.
You establish a complete loving bond with this tiger. Do you name it?
I was just trying to think of what I was going to call it because I knew that was coming up.
We can circle back if you want more time.
We might have to. I'm really bad about thinking about names. Because I just think of everything from all the movies I've seen, and those are so overused.
There's nothing wrong with that.
I know, but...
Like, 40% of our campaign is basically a ripoff of Harry Potter.
Can I just call him Hobbs?
Sure.
Is that the tiger's
name? Yeah, Hobbs! Yeah, that's awesome.
We'll just call him Hobbs.
Okay, so Hobbs the tiger. I love that. Alright, so you both hunt together, you hang out together, and after 8 years from this moment... you have connected with this tiger and all of the surrounding animals to a point where you can now wild shape into them whenever. You figure out that you can, if you're able to establish a direct connection with the spirit of that animal, you can turn into it. Over the years, after doing this so many times, you're able to do it real quick, hence the Tyrannosaurus.
hence the Tyrannosaurus.
Yeah, that's all the future.
We became really good friends.
Yeah, real good friends. Best buds. You don't come across a whole lot in the wild. You come across a few birds, owls, fantasy elk. You know wolves, you know wild cats, you know basically all the things that are kind of out in nature in this area, which is pretty good, but not everything there is to be.
Right.
You haven't come across any real like owl bears or anything like that. So nothing like that big. But, cool. So, you and your partner out in the country, hanging out.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty good.
Just River and Hobbs.
Yep. And you guys live a solitary life for quite a while. You're out in as a hermit for about 36 to 37 years. And this night, you lay down and you curl up and sleep with your tiger friend next to you. There's a couple of birds and some bugs hanging out by a little garden that you started in the cave. You've really kind of made this place pretty nice and your own. You're looking at the ceiling, and as you're starting to fall asleep, you notice some dirt and rocks lightly kind of falling from the roof. And as you're watching, large roots that you had kind of seen before in the cave come down towards you, and they kind of start to approach you cautiously, like they want to kind of tap you.
These are roots?
They're roots.
Okay.
They're very large, funky roots. One of them kind of reaches down and it taps your forehead, unless you decide like this is super weird.
No, I mean, I encountered the emerald and the roots before.
Yeah.
So
you're like, this makes sense.
Yeah, wouldn't surprise me too much.
It taps your head, and you kind of get a, basically kind of a beacon in your head that goes off, that something really weird is going on, and you hear this voice again saying, on the top of the hill that looks over the sleeping giants, there's someone there, something dark, stop them.
I want to say River goes back to sleep and, and then does something the next morning.
You can.
I think that's...
If you would like.
Well, I mean, that sounds pretty urgent. I guess I'll get up. Adrian would go back to sleep.
Yeah.
But River would get up.
Okay. Okay.
She wakes up Hobbs and...
So when it tapped you, it kind of gave you a really good sense on where this thing was happening. And you make your way through the woods. You are approaching the hill that kind of overlooks the three sleeping giants. And on this hill, you find hundreds of bodies, about 200 plus. They're wearing robes that they all match. There are goblets next to each one.
They're dead bodies.
They're dead bodies. It's pretty easy to assume that they are some kind of cult or obviously all connected to something. And as you approach the top of this hill, over the crest of it, you start to see a tall, spindly robed figure with a shorter figure. Both of them completely hairless, no facial hair, eyebrows, anything like that. They're totally bald. And the tall one kind of speaks in a hissing voice. I'd like you to roll a stealth check. That looks pretty good from where I am.
It's a 10.
Okay, that'll
12,
do it.
So I mean, 12.
They're pretty involved. And you hear one of them in a hissing voice say, "The sacrifice is complete. We must break the crystal." And the shorter of the two says, "Then remove it. I'll crush it with my hammer." What do you do?
Well, River knows dark forces when she sees them.
Yeah. These are real dark force vibes going on right now.
But she's also never seen death on this magnitude before. Or anything like that. So she's pretty scared and cautious. But they told her to stop them. So I think she tries to sneak around behind them and see if she can get the one to stop from breaking the crystal. Is that
okay,
what doing?
Yeah. Do you want the short one?
Yeah.
Okay.
He's the one with the hammer or whatever.
Yes.
Yeah.
So are you going to attack the short one?
Yes.
Okay, so you're going to get a surprise round. And we might as well roll initiative here.
19 plus 2, 21.
Damn. Dang, Ruby, you're
rolling well when it counts, right?
Ah, seriously. Dwarf battle card right here.
So she's going to cast the Thunder Wave again to try and, you know, blow them away from the...
Yeah.
Crystal. So they have to make Constitution saving throw, which I disadvantage because I'm stealthed. It's my stealth round.
Yeah, I'd say that. Good thing for that disadvantage.
He rolled well the first time.
He failed, yeah. And I'm guessing the other one would kind of be in the blast radius.
Right.
That would be a 6. So they're both going to fail that.
Mm-hmm. So they're pushed away 10 feet, and they take 2d8 damage. Also, any unsecured objects that are completely are in the area, like completely within the 10 feet radius, are pushed away 10, not 10 foot radius, 15 cubic feet.
Okay.
Are pushed away 10 feet. And the spell emits a thunderous boom audible up to 300 feet away. Hopefully there's no one else.
Cool.
They both take 11 damage.
11 damage. Oh, dang. Okay. Math, Corey. Math. Okay. You cast this, and you knock down... There were some, like, scrolls, a couple of, like, unlit torches. Like, maybe they were kind of carried up there. Like a book on the ground. There's just a bunch of random shit all around here that kind of goes flying. You kind of knock both of them off their feet a distance, and as one of them kind of goes, you see a glint from the tall spindly one as it flies back, and on a chain hanging from their waist is a crystal kind of cut like a diamond, but it is gold in nature. So it's kind of a shimmering gold crystal that is has a little hole drilled through it, hanging from a chain.
Okay.
Okay. And they kind of fall back on the ground, and they kind of stand up and turn around. And the dwarf goes, "You don't know what powers you're messing with." And the tall one goes, "You fool! So now we're going to jump into our initiative order, which you are also in first of. And why don't you roll initiative for your tiger,
too? I was going
to
say, does Bob's get a fight? 16.
16. Dang, Hobbs.
I don't know what I, you mean. Do my river's
turn. Oh, yeah, your turn.
I was gonna say, sorry, I don't know why roll. I just rolled. I gotta figure out what I'm gonna do.
That's the one.
So I'm gonna cast poison spray on them.
Okay.
So they're about 10 feet away because that spell pushed them back 10 feet, right?
Yes. Okay. And is this like it's for both of them? If they're standing next to each other, they'll both be hit.
Extend your hand one? Toward a creature. Okay, so a creature.
So which one? I will say, with your knowledge, you know dwarves are resistant to poison.
Right, but I feel the bigger one's more, the more powerful one. So I'm gonna go toward him.
Okay.
Anyway, do I know what he is?
Not really.
Not creature. Okay. I'm gonna do it toward him.
Okay.
So, Constitution saving throw from him.
Okay. Constitution saving throw, not his best stuff. Mm-hmm. 10.
What does he have to?
You'll have your spell DC on there.
I was like, what does he have to get?
Yeah.
14.
Yeah.
So he takes 9 damage.
9 damage?
I'm poison spray.
Whoop. 9 damage. Awesome. Okay. Now it is Hobbs' turn in order of initiative.
Hobbs is going to pounce.
Okay.
On the big one.
On the big one or on the dwarf?
On the dwarf. I'll go for the dwarf.
Okay.
So he pounces at least 20 feet straight toward a creature and hits it with a claw attack.
Okay.
On the same turn. Sorry.
Okay.
I don't know the tiger stats offhand.
No, it's fine. If you did know the tiger stats offhand, I'd be concerned.
So it must make a strength saving throw. Dwarf makes a strength.
Oh, sorry. I was just checking in with Matt. How's this sounding so far?
So the dwarf makes a strength saving throw.
Okay.
And I'm going to claw attack him.
It's a 7 for his strength save.
Okay, so he had a DC of 13 for the strength
saving
throw.
Yeah, there's no
way. So he's knocked prone.
Okay. He gets tackled by Hobbs.
Tiger can make bite as one bonus action. So okay. My claw was 5, so I'm assuming that didn't hit.
5, that did not hit.
Oh, melee weapon attack plus 5 to hit, so 10.
Oh, 10?
Yeah.
No, 10 know. Still doesn't hit, okay. So he kind of moves out of the way as he claws.
He misses
at him.
The claw. So my bonus action will be bite.
Okay.
18?
18, that will hit.
Okay, so takes 1d10 plus 3 piercing damage. That's not my d10.
Yeah.
8 plus 3, so 12 or 11.
11 damage?
11 damage.
He is looking rough. He's, like, bleeding out. It, like, bites onto his neck, and it starts spraying, and he's kind of feeling pretty weak with this tiger on top of him. He gets up, because is it his turn? No, it's not his turn. It's this
other guy.
Cult priest person that's there. It's their turn, and they are going to... cast magic missile.
Okay.
9. He's shooting 2 bolts at you, River, for mm-hmm. 9 damage.
Okay.
And he's shooting 1 at the tiger for 4 damage.
Tiger's got a lot more health than I do.
Hobbs is badass.
Okay.
River's
bloodied.
Okay. So it's the dwarf's turn, and he's going to weakly try to. There's no way he'd pull that off. In his current state. He's going to stand up for half of his movement, and he's going to kind of...
That's right, he was knocked prone.
Yes, so he's going to kind of waddle over closer to the tiger, and while holding a hand on his neck, kind of swing at the tiger, and I'm going to give him disadvantage for his current condition, and it was a 13?
AC's 12.
AC's 12, okay, so he hit... so that is 1d8 plus 2 piercing, so 5 piercing damage. Okay, cool. So it is back over to you, River.
River only has 2 spell slots at level 1, and I've used one of them, so I just have to keep using cantrips.
Okay, well, this dwarf is in rough shape.
Right. I know, but the other, well, I guess I'll just try and take out the dwarf. produce flame again.
Okay.
Which one does more damage? Yeah, we'll do produce flame again.
Okay.
So I'm gonna throw a flame ball at him.
Throw a flame ball.
A flame ball.
Okay. So I think roll arranged. Right.
Flickering flame in your hand, the flame remains the duration. It gives off light, or you can attack, although it ends the spell. When you cast the spell as an action, you hurl the flame at a creature within 30 feet and make a ranged spell attack. Nope.
Okay. So you miss. It kind of goes by him, which he is very thankful for. Mm-hmm. And it is now Hobbs.
Hobbs is going to make a claw attack.
Okay,
on the dwarf.
Dwarfy.
So that's 22.
Yeah.
and damage is 8 plus 3.
Okay. Yeah. 11. Yeah. He overkilled him.
At least
basically,
we took out one of them.
So the Hobbs swipes and just catches the chest through the armor of this dwarf, and he just collapses and lays there bleeding. This cult priest kind of stands back and looks and sees the dwarf, and she goes, "That's it. I need time. I need to complete this spell." And she goes, takes out kind of a wand and kind of points it down the hill and goes, "Rise!" and casts a spell, and the 200 plus that were now dead have now raised up as spirits, and they kind of...
That's why I wanted to kill the necromancer first.
Yeah, they kind of rallied and kind of separated you and the priest. Okay. They kind of pushed you back, so now they're kind of standing in between you as this large group. And as this looks like kind of an insurmountable thing, roll a perception check.
Nine.
Okay. You don't hear it, so you get quite a shock when a little birdie lands on your shoulder and starts tweeting at your face. Really loudly and excitedly.
Okay.
Would you like to speak with animals?
It's a good thing I saved one spell slot because I can cast that.
Mm-hmm.
Speak with animals. Yeah, I'll cast speak with animals to talk to the bird.
Okay. It goes, she told us, don't worry, River, we're coming. And you start to hear the sound of, like, branches falling and wood breaking and all of these just noises coming from the woods. And out from the woods comes hundreds of bears, elk, birds. They're carrying rocks and dropping them on them. But all of these creatures come to your aid out of the forest, and they just run into this group and start mauling them, tearing these other cult members apart. And through all this chaos and fracas, your tiger kind of bounds through the center of it and kind of starts slashing at people and making a pathway leading you right to the priest.
Okay.
So, you going for it? It's going after this fool?
Is it my turn? Oh, he cast.
I'm letting it kind of reset here.
I would say, was it his turn casting?
Yeah, that took up his turn.
Okay, yes. I'm going to cast Poison Spray on him again.
Okay.
For 19, so it hits.
19, that will hit.
I'm assuming.
Stop looking at my card.
Oh, wait, sorry, it has to make a Constitution. I didn't know it
Oh,
hit.
Constitution saving
Sorry, throw? Yeah, I just rolled to hit, but...
No, that's fine. That is a epic fail.
Okay. And he takes 9 damage.
Okay, go ahead and roll another one.
Another
since
attack.
Since I crit failed that.
We'll attack again.
I'm taking it kind of as a crit 20.
As a double damage.
Yeah.
10 damage. 19 damage.
Shit. Okay. All right. You poison this priest and they kind of fall backwards and kind of land and they start to roll over. And you can hear them just coughing up blood from this poison. And they put their hand up to their mouth, and they kind of cough some more blood into that, and do a perception check.
20.
You see the chain hanging from the waist doesn't have the crystal on it anymore. So they're coughing into their hand, and they kind of stand up, and they are holding the crystal. And they're on wobbly legs, And it's like, and she's kind of looking at it, trying to get the strength to kind of like crush it or slam it down or something like that. And since it is Hobbs' turn in the order.
I'm going to try and get Hobbs to knock the crystal out of their hand.
Okay.
So I'm going to try pounce again.
Okay.
So saving throw for the strength saving throw.
Okay.
For the priest.
Not the strong suit. Oh, crit fail.
13. Okay. So they're going to be knocked prone. And they're going to make a claw attack.
Okay.
Hobbs to make a claw attack. 12 plus 5.
Yeah, 17. That hits.
Okay. So they take 1d8.
Yeah, they have 1 health, so...
Okay, well, 8 plus 3 damage on the claw. And then they get bite, so he can just bite the dead
so
body.
He's just going to start eating this thing. the cult priest gets knocked back, and with that fail on a strength save... The crystal goes flying out of their hand, and it lands on the ground on a rock, and it shatters.
Okay.
And they fall and die, and the tiger mauls it. And once the priest dies, all the other bodies drop that are fighting in this war. When this crystal breaks, there is a large golden explosion of light that kind of arcs out. Not necessarily backwards into the forest. There's a small kind of circle that kind of goes over, you know, the dead bodies, the animals that were sitting there. They kind of go through you and your tiger. You're kind of all involved in this and over some of the trees. But what you see is a large wave of gold light go down over the hill, go through the gulch, and then go up the mountains. And then you can see them kind of go down the other side. And it's like a large force of wind that kind of
thunder
does this kind of like that, yeah, except on a massive scale.
Okay.
And when this happens, you see something kind of odd. Looking over into the gulch, you see like 3 trees that are down there just kind of start running.
Okay.
So there's
like tree beard style.
Yeah. So there's like,
or are they fast?
3 tree ants that were just kind of hiding out in there that got spooked and started kind of running around.
Okay.
So this happens, and you're not entirely sure what that means or what's going on. And the animals all kind of go back into the forest on their own. And everything kind of goes back to normal. You spend a week as you would any other time, as you're normal to do. But one morning, you wake up, and something's different. Someone isn't there.
Hobbs.
You wake up and you look over and your tiger is lifeless on the side of the cave.
I think I'm more sad about that than Cronin.
Yeah. You look and his color almost seems drained from his fur. You look at his eyes and his eyes are all black. They've gotten really cloudy. You feel okay. And you kind of go out of the cave and kind of look at the forest. And you can see green, but as it starts to go farther, it's getting paler. And it's getting a little bit darker, a little more gray going into the distance. What would you like to do?
I think River will look for probably the nearest like animal or creature she can find.
Mm-hmm.
Cast speak with animals and try and see if they know anything or see anything that happens.
So as you kind of go to the edge of this area where the color starts changing, you're not feeling any different. You feel okay. But you see a fantasy elk kind of on wobbly legs kind of walking around through the trees where it's kind of gray. And you can see kind of their eyes starting to darken a little bit. And you said you cast speak with animals.
Mm-hmm.
What do you want to say?
Oh, obviously he looks sickly, so I won't ask him if he's okay. And if he's seen anything or heard anything about what's going on.
And he just goes, no, I'm just so tired.
Can I cast Cure Wounds on the elk?
Yeah.
See if I can heal him. I don't think I have to roll for a hit for that. So I heal him for 10.
Okay.
See if he feels any better.
He kind of perks up and smiles at you, but it doesn't look like it does any sort of difference. His sunglasses kind of start to droop off of his nose. Fantasy elk.
Their sunglasses.
They're so great. So, do you want to investigate further into the forest? Kind of see...
I think for
sure... Where this color fade is going?
Yeah. I just... Can I retcon that she had a ceremony for Hobbs and...
Absolutely.
Buried Hobbs.
Yeah.
And grieve for Hobbs first.
Absolutely.
And then we'll go investigate.
Okay. So, you have a lovely ceremony where you bury some of the other animals from deeper within the forest kind of show
up. Some of Hobbs' fighting friends.
Yeah. There's a few more that are kind of starting to look like they're a little sickly. You can see kind of early signs. And it's a beautiful ceremony. And so you decide to venture forth into the woods. And as you keep going through the woods, you can see it kind of getting darker. It, from looking at it, it doesn't look like it's necessarily spreading. It looks like the force of the blast, however far it reached out, was less than it was doing. So some of them that started turning color, you could kind of rub off, and it was kind of like a weird ash over the leaves.
Okay.
So they're kind of coming back. But everything else just kind of keeps getting sicker. You make your way up to the hill where the battle happened and where the crystal exploded, and you look out, and what you see is actually kind of a terrible sight. The mountains, the three giants that were covered in leaves, are now stone.
Okay.
The gulch down below is a dark gray. It looks very ashen. And some of the trees, starting from the top of the mountain, kind of fading out, they are starting to kind of break apart and float away in the wind, like they've totally crisped over. So something awful is happening to the woods down there, and there's something terrible happening to the woods kind of up there. There's something really strange going on. And roll a perception check.
I think it's 21.
No, perfect. You look down, and you see very lumbering... these three trees that are kind of making their way through, very, very slow, lumbering through, but there's little red dots within the leaves, almost like little fruits.
Okay.
And they're just kind of, it's an eerie, creepy sight. So from there, what would you like to do? There seems to be this major... disturbance.
Can I talk to the trees?
Those trees?
Yeah.
Yeah, you can absolutely try to approach them. Okay. It's going to be a little bit of a hike.
Okay. She doesn't mind a hike, so...
Yeah.
I think she goes and tries to talk to them and ask them if they know what's going on.
You go down, and these trees look zombified, and they are getting very hostile.
Okay. She doesn't want to kill them either, so she...
Yeah.
I think she'll... won't pursue that. Animals don't know, the trees don't know, so I think she's going to go try and talk to some humanoids and see if they
okay. You do notice from interacting with these trees that the little red spots in their leaves are indeed a fruit. They're very, they kind of look like old Christmas light bulbs where they're round and they kind of come to a point, but there are spiky points on the fruit themselves.
Are there any that she can collect?
No. They're all kind of up in the branches and they are...
They won't let me take it.
They're nasty boys.
Okay.
So you're going to kind of talk to people.
I'm going to try to find either the nearest town or the nearest hunting party or camping party or whatever.
Okay. Perfect, because that fits in with what I was writing. You make your way through the forest, and you can, as you're walking through, you're kind of going along the cliff face again, trying to find your way back to a town or city, find a camping spot. And kind of up on the mountain, you see a large, knotted... tree with very large branches, and there's something about this tree that is just...
Is it a tree that moves, or just...
It's not a tree that moves. It is just a...
Just checking.
Beautiful tree.
Okay.
Did you want to check out this tree?
Yeah, can I roll a perception check
for the tree?
22.
Okay. Check out the tree, and it is... It has some sort of... life force to it. You can feel something kind of strong, kind of pulling you in, kind of making you want to touch it. And you can kind of see along the bottom there's roots, and they're kind of sticking up out of the ground a little bit and curving, and they look a lot like the roots that were in that main cave and also came down and spoke to you in the other.
She'll go up and touch it.
Okay. So you go up and you touch this tree, and you can just kind of hear it whisper and go, something's wrong. And then it fades out.
And River says, no shit, tree. Thanks.
And as the voice kind of fades out, you can kind of feel this life, this presence, this force that's in this tree kind of transfer over to you, and it just kind of becomes a normal tree.
Okay.
So there's a little bit of protection there for all the stuff that went on. And you can kind of figure out that this is probably the shape that this druid took once it passed away and passed its gift on to you. Okay, so you start looking around. You go into a couple towns. It's kind of awkward talking to people, obviously. So you talk to a few, but really you're kind of hitting up the nature in these areas. And they have no idea about anything that was happening where you were. But one of them says, if you want to know about magic, over the mountains, that's kind of the freeland area, tons of magic knowledge up over there. So I'd definitely check out some of the other lands. So are you going across the mountain mm-hmm. range? Okay. Yeah. You go over, you're getting help from mountain goats and all these other animals that reside up there. There's a black bear that kind of you talk to, and you kind of take shelter in his den for a little bit and kind of go down out of the mountains. And you start hitting up a couple small towns within the woods. And one of them says that go up north a little bit because I've heard of a couple places up there that they actually study magic, and they have people that know a lot about magic up in these towns. You start going up. You've been walking for almost like a full day, okay. just trying to kind of get to someplace new, try to find some sort of lead about something that's going on. And luckily, you come across this town. And when you get into this town, you look around, and it's late, but it's still bustling. There's a lot of people, and there's quite a few people making their way towards one building. And this building looks a lot like a kick-ass tavern.
The best place to find information in town is at the bar, so she's going to go.
Absolutely, everyone
talks. Go in the bar, kind of sit at a table by herself, and kind of listen and watch and see who's doing
okay. Well, you go in, and there is music, laughing, arguing, a variety of what you can tell is classes and races and groups of people together, and there's a bartender across cleaning out a glass, and he hears the door open, and he looks at you and goes, hey, welcome, traveler, to motherfucking Red Larch. I'm Harlethor. What will you have?
Cheers. Where's a pint?
And he gets you a pint.